Mr. Gully, Reel 10. Can we stay with the characters that and people that you were meeting? You've mentioned the corporal. Who else in that particular platoon and section became close to you, or you became close to them?
Well, two were friends that we were more platoon. A lot of coach in the medics, Mr. Gorman, or a big football league. Maybe not all of them, I just have to appear from up into the secure. He was promoted to us, coach in the big one. Jimmy was promoted to us, coach. And we sort of met when we were in a, with them being in one platoon, and I being in two platoon. Well, Jock, clearly, that's corporate and corporate. The four of us used to go together when we had three tanks. I sort of stuck with those friends. All were playing football and hockey, and I had the occasional game of rugby. I was up. I've never played rugby in my life until Sean Kelly came to me one day. I said, well, you're playing rugby, what can you play rugby? You're playing rugby this afternoon, you're brilliant. I said, well, if I've never played, I said, well, I know, he said, you've never played, you play hockey. I said, well, that's the one. What's the name between hockey and rugby? I said, play rugby. So I went to Billingham, and all the officers, Charlie officers, and they beat my little children on the short. Jimmy Davidson, I mentioned myself, who played football, were drafted into to make the 15s of them. We all went well for about half an hour, and I had the ball going over the touchline. And this officer of about 14 stone, and would be about 6 foot in me. I went over the barrier, split my arm from one end to the other. Now, this happens to be the day that you wore gas masks. And all I had was my P62 football boots and straps. Well, I had a football strip, which was acting as the rugby strip. And then, two officers, John Kelly's battle at the time. It was a man called Bellis. He said, Bellis, he says, you're going to take the corporal down to the MI room. He said, what's a massive gas down here? He said, I'm stitched. So we're walking from there, the football field where the rugby was, walking down Cardigan Road towards, and all, he was dressed in the uniform, of course, and all I had was my football kit. And who should come around the corner but his lordship, Charles Lattenby. I didn't have no uniform on, no gas mask, the blood's dripping off my arm. And he drank us to one shine. As to what, why I was dressed improperly, why I wasn't wearing a gas mask, and I had to stand there, shut my arm out. I'm not interested, he said, in where you've been or what you're doing. Why didn't you dress before you leave? I said, well, Lieutenant Kelly sent me down to the MI room. I don't care who sent you. He said, if the God himself has sent you, he says, you know what to do. I said, yes, wear a wristband. So he said, well, go and get it dressed. I went to the MI room and he said, report back to my office after you get dressed. So what he'd done, he got up the rugby football field, checked with Sean Kelly, and by the time I got 5 or 6 stitches from the duck in the arm, wandered up to battalion headquarters, stood outside his office, knocked on the door and went in. He said, oh, that's all right. He said, and what have you got? Well, I said, I'm excused duty for about a fortnight. I said, fair enough, go home, get dressed, back to the barracks and get dressed. And that was it. Well, he'd gone to the football station and checked on to see if I'd been doing something else. Because I found out later, because I asked the young brothers about it, and he asked him, Sean Kelly. And that was Charlie. Doesn't matter how you see Sean, you still have to be in regiment order.
Were there any other characters amongst the privates that you were in your section and platoon? that come to mind?
One particular character, his name was Peter. I used to take lessons, you know, we had to do revisions. We'd already done it, but we did revision on the brand and go on revision on different subjects. And it doesn't matter how many times you tell this story, how you remember the battle, or how you did such and such a thing with a mortar, how you set the sights on a mortar, he couldn't remember. But the same kid, you could sit down and you play a tune of music and listen to it once, and he could sing that song word for word. But you could tell him about anything in the army, and he could not remember. If you left the room and come back, he even forgot what you'd been talking about or what weapon you were doing. But give him a song, and he could hear it, play the radio, hear a song on the radio, and he could sing them, and he could sing that song word for word. And he used to amaze us, because we used to think the other man, we tried him out, and he could do that.
Comedians, were there any comedians amongst them?
I think we're all comedians. Oh, we have two particular comedians in the party. One long stream line called Danny Charlie, and another one called Scott Burns, who was a bugler. The only trouble was he used to play the bugle in the room. You could always tell when Smash Burns is on duty. I suppose Ron Deere had been a rock and roller, but he could play that bugle and put a little in the bugle he was playing, not the straightforward. And of course, later on, when we got a brother, maybe I did it on the Italian concerts, which I would only celebrate. There were quite a few characters. Everybody seemed to have a little bit of character. I can't remember many more, to be honest. I think people said themselves, well, this is it. Let's make the best of it. First of all, we go to volunteer one night and smash the next night. And always want to learn a shoot or learn a telephone or phone.
How important are the characters you mentioned in a unit?
Very important. Very, very important to have people, because you know sometimes that you're going to rely on the same people. There were people, I think you find out when you leave things like little things, when you leave things lying about, and you go back and you see that. People who would come up and say, well, if you want to mind what happened, I'll give you a design. Or if you're stuck with a big problem, sometimes on a route march. It wasn't everybody that did particularly have talking about it. It was always somebody, give me that bend and I'll carry it. Give me the anti-tank rifle, I'll take it. There was the weaker ones and the stronger ones. But everybody seemed to help each other. But there was a spirit there in the DLI that I have never found, or even when I've returned to civilian life. There's something about being with And back on with life. And I have never encountered the ceiling to really know. Because the two things about it, I can't put my finger on it. If I could, I think I would have been a top director in it. But there's a ceiling about it that sort of goes on it.
Did you get the odd bully in the unit?
No, we never had any. We never had any trouble like that.
And you accepted the weak with the strong, did you?
Sometimes you have to detail somebody, but that was a little bit of more, and I still do it. As I said previously, I've never found the same spirit of comradeship anywhere that I've found in the Devons.
You spend most of your time at Bridlington, you say, on base defences and protection. Yeah. Did you do any route marches whilst you were
marching,
there?
Yes. One in particular we had to do. What's it? Run a mile, walk a mile, or something like that. And that was a pretty strange affair. But once the incident happened once or twice, the regimental band came down, and we had given it tremendous route marching about 2 or 3 years, I think, about 6 or 7 months across the mainland. And everybody, and when I say everybody, I mean, including from the single road downwards, were just about on top of us. And we got outside the building in about 3 or 4 miles, and the regimental band was there. And old Charlie Langley said, "We are going to march through Birmingham by bloody soldiers, not like a bloody rabble." And the band started up, and we started to play the regimental march, and one or two more. And I have never seen everything like it. You would think everybody had been hacked up for something. But the band started playing, you know, playing the light bar. The shoulders and things like that, and the air march, everybody, George Batchelor, with a march to the air. I got to the barracks, I just absolutely collapsed. But for that last few miles, I was talking about for a long while, amongst the bars. Sometimes you just say, "Well, we're on another road march. I wish the bomb was there. You know, I hope the bomb would be there." But that was tremendous. It would be a long one. I know that. But I always remember the bomb. The first time the bomb came down the floor.
Was there any other form of training at Bridlington?
Well, this is a bit more weightlift training, drill. Well, not even teaching the drill for the slope and the percent and the shoulder and things like that, because you never knew when to drill down with the turn over where you might have gone. Mostly we were exercises, night exercises we did through the brilliant and all that. But nothing really, what they call these schemes. And if you were lucky that you might then be able to look at all that and get it on with them. I don't think anybody enjoyed it, because when the grill was up, it was a cheese sandwich with a slice of bread cut about an inch thick with a piece of cheese in. What was the point that you get through 2 or 3 years on an exercise?
And was this against a defending force, attacking and defending?
It was attacking and defending. We were preparing then, I would say, more to go on the attack. I think the war that took this. The Battle of Britain had altered the perspective on the training. It seemed the first part, a few months ago, they were down close to the defences and taking everything away. And then it changed altogether. We started doing battalion attacks and brigade attacks. These big army exercises, 2 or 3 year exercises.
What were the things that they were concentrating on at that time in these schemes?
Well, the only thing we were concentrating on, you see, we never seemed to get to know the larger plan that was going on. What we were doing was, as a platoon, we were given instructions, we were given by the company commander to at least tell them what was going to do, or where it should be, what sort of attack we were going to do. And these were carried out, the sergeant passed the instructions to the corporal, and they knew where your regulars were going, where your rifle was going, or where the team headquarters mortars were going, and different things like that. And we never used to get to know the big picture of them. This was only concern on officers, senior officers. And all that consisted of doing as you were instructed from the top and making the platoon work. And that was there. As much as we even came from there down to Reedsfield, Otterburn, where we did exercises for the artillery, like division exercises. And even then, the only instructions we got were returning the attack, the firing line on the mission. And we were concerned with the platoon and company attacks, apart from that, we didn't even know why the rest of the time we were back.
Was it fire and movement?
Fire and movement, yeah.
Not in lines with rifles and just walking? You did that as well?
Yes.
Which harkened back to First World War.
Artillery barrages, creeping barrages
support, tank support.
Are you working with tanks?
Yeah. Well, we didn't see any, but they were all the whole division and all the support groups were up there together. The only thing that you knew was that you saw a vehicle with the cross keys on, which was a divisional sign, and say, "Oh, it must be one of us." Yeah. But I still don't know anything about it. But I was told that. you never see the real picture of me until after that happened. So she already described it to her as it happened. And of course, years to go to these conferences, when we got back, but the words of the last call were the word might have been much as well. It was most of the officers and company commander and platoon commanders, which maybe we can mention as platoon commanders, we had two or three good officers. But Sean Kelly was one. I should have seen him because to me, I think he was the best. Another one called Pat Long.
Who was number two platoon commander?
Well, we had a few. Sean was in one. We seem to lose officers to different patrols. We had a chap called Nassim at Dillingham, who was the bouncer. But he was with us for a short while, and then he went to Brigade headquarters. And we had a star coming from Scotland. There was Campbell, Sean Kelly. And obviously, here's the team come and go like the seasons. We were there for a short while and off to somewhere else. The longest. One of the longest officers that I've had is a chap called Connery, but I think when we went to the door, I went to the door.
Do you remember who was commanding A Company?
Oh, yeah, Dennis Rundgren was commanding A Company. The first commander of A Company, before Dennis Rundgren, was Major Hunter, the gentleman that I met in France. He came to A Company when it moved to Birmingham. He was there for a short while. I think he went back to the depot. I'm not sure about that. And Dennis Hunter came, he was a ranger who had been through horse cars. Horse cars out of the woods. And then he surrendered. And he took his commission. So he knew all the ropes. We knew what was going on down the road, as well as going on the top, but we knew it all. But,
good officers. What makes a good officer?
Well, firstly, I think we must understand the men of the team. We must get them all. Capabilities, how far he can push it. We must make, we must make a decision and stand by it, right or wrong, accept the responsibility and not push the responsibility down on his NCOs. I think it's for a moment that we direct the NCOs. He must establish himself as a leader and get the confidence of the men that he's leading, because without that, he is absolutely nothing. I think the men will look to an officer who will take responsibility, who will think, and then before he makes a final decision, or talk with his sergeant and his corporals, ask their opinions, discuss their opinions, and not just jump up and say, this is what we're going to be aware of. I think he must get the confidence of his NCOs, because his NCOs are responsible for the lives of their sections, and without their cooperation, it doesn't work.
So it's a very close relationship.
Thank you.